159 Ivy Street, Chapter 2. Living for the nights, Braddon had started writing again without meaning to. It wasn't intentional at first. It never was. It began the way these things always did, with a sentence that was meant to be harmless. A note to self. A fragment. Something scribbled between emails and ice packs and the quiet negotiation he had with his own body every night about pain and sleep. But Josephine had a way of slipping past his defenses, so he wrote her down. Not as she was. He wasn't arrogant enough to believe he could capture that, but as she felt. The effect of her. The disturbance. The strange reordering of things inside him that had been neatly shelved for years. Night after night, he found himself in front of the screen long after the world had decided it was done with him for the day. The room lit only by that pale, conspiratorial glow that made everything feel more intimate than it had a right to be. Whenever she was online, the words came easily. Effortlessly, as if they had been waiting, hours dissolved, days followed, weeks folded in on themselves. Their conversations became something like a confessional river, sometimes shallow and playful, sometimes deep enough to scare him if he thought about it too long. Thoughts, ideas, memories, dreams. They traded them the way children once traded secrets under blankets, whispering because whispering made it real. Somewhere along the way, Josephine became Peb. It happened mid-conversation, without ceremony. "What's that mean?" she'd typed, suspicious but amused. "Pebbles," he replied. "Small things that change the shape of water over time," she laughed. He could hear it somehow. And just like that, the name stayed. She had entered his life exactly like that, unexpected, carried by currents he didn't remember stepping into. Washing up from some unseen ocean floor and landing quietly on the shore of his heart. Not crashing. Not demanding. Just there. Impossible to ignore once noticed. Some nights, Braddon would lean back in his chair and stare at the ceiling, the question circling him like a low-flying plane. Is this real? Or was it a fantasy built from proximity and timing and the human tendency to mistake connection for destiny when loneliness had softened the edges of reason? He asked himself that question often. Too often, his friends asked it for him bluntly and without poetry. Peb became a recurring topic in conversations he didn't invite but couldn't fully shut down. "You've never met her. She lives where? She has a kid. Isn't she still married?" He silenced them as best he could. Life to Braddon wasn't meant to be audited. It was meant to be experienced, measured not by feasibility but by resonance. And yet, even he could feel it, that subtle unmooring. The sense of standing with one foot in the life, he knew, and the other in the intoxicating, dangerous country of what if. As Christmas edged closer, the memory of the night they first met online replayed itself with cinematic persistence. He remembered the electricity of it, the way excitement and vulnerability had collided so cleanly it felt rehearsed. Familiar, but new. New in the way only things that touch old wounds could be. He wanted to ask her about it. Needed to know if that pulse, which he still felt, was shared or self-generated. One evening, the room was quiet except for the low hum of the city outside. Braddon inhaled slowly. He let the breath fill him all the way to the ribs. Then he leaned forward, fingers hovering over the keyboard like they were about to step onto thin ice. "Peb," he typed. "Do you remember the first night we met? I can't stop thinking about it. It felt different, like something clicked. Did you feel that too?" The cursor blinked. "Once. Twice." The silence stretched, not empty, but full. The kind that hums with possibility. Braddon leaned back, heart knocking around his chest like it was trying to escape politely. Then the screen lit up. "I remember it," she wrote. "You caught me off guard with that thing you said about the wind. I felt like you were talking to something inside me, like you saw me." His chest tightened in that familiar, dangerous way. "I felt the same," he replied. "Like we were strangers in a crowded room who somehow forgot everyone else existed." "Exactly," she said. "I didn't plan on letting myself feel anything, but you made it easy, like fresh air." Braddon smiled, slow and involuntary. "I guess I just needed to know if you still feel it," he admitted. "The spark, it's been a whirlwind." "I do," she answered. "Every time we talk, you've become important to me. I didn't see that coming." It was not a declaration, not a promise, just truth placed gently between them. "It's strange," he typed. "Feeling like I've known you forever when we've only just begun." "Strange," she agreed. "But good. They didn't say love, they didn't need to, the restraint mattered. It kept the thing alive without pinning it down." "Let's keep talking," he said. "One conversation at a time." "I'd like that," she replied. He leaned back, exhaling, the room suddenly too small for the hope expanding inside him. Only later, much later, did he realize that something fundamental had shifted. that this wasn't just a conversation. It was the slow return of a voice he hadn't known was missing. Josephine's life, as it unfolded between messages, was layered and complicated. She had Anthony, 10 years old, polite, bright, carrying that quiet self-consciousness that children develop when they sense the world isn't as stable as adults pretend it is. She had been married young, 9 years, a life built quickly, then slowly dismantled. Venezuela to New York City, expectations to reality, love to logistics. She reminded Braden of the woman in Chocolat, Face to the Wind, unafraid of change even when it hurt. "How was your day?" he'd ask. "Another crazy, smelly day in the Big Apple," she'd reply. He knew she was unhappy there. He could hear it between the jokes. "It's life," he'd say, philosophical as ever. "Not as it should be, just as it is, but it won't be forever." One night, she surprised him. "I read your poem," she typed. "It's sad, waiting in a black hole for an angel." "Not sad," he replied. "I've just loved and lost. That's human. Never loving, that's the tragedy. Besides, I found my angel." There was a pause after that. Neither of them named what was growing. Nomming would make it fragile. Nomming would make it real in ways they weren't ready to negotiate. "It's the leg," she asked another night. "Still couch potato bound." "Oh, please," he shot back. "2 months in and you think I'm helpless." Her laugh came through in punctuation. Christmas crept closer. Braden planned quietly. Earrings for her, delicate, understated. Perfect. Anthony's Xbox was already secured. He hated disappointment. Hated it with a discipline forged early. After his father died, Braden learned early how to be alone. "How about Christmas gifts?" Josephine asked one night. "What do you want?" "Oh God," he said. "We're doing gifts." "You already bought mine," she accused. "I can tell," smiled to himself. "How, Anthony?" he asked, changing the subject. "Still dreaming of an Xbox," she said. "They're sold out everywhere." "I might know a guy," Braden replied lightly. Her reaction came back in all caps and disbelief. For a moment he felt heroic, then he corrected himself. This wasn't about heroics, it was about care, quiet care. "What do I get you?" she asked again. "Polo," he said. "My cologne." Safe, but beneath it, something deeper waited, something held back. A long inhale before a leap, neither of them had admitted they were standing on. Josephine never intended to let it happen. That was the part she told herself most often, usually while brushing her teeth or standing in the shower long after the water had gone lukewarm, staring at nothing. She had rules. She had responsibilities. She had a son asleep in the next room whose breathing anchored her to the present, whether she liked it or not. She had just come out of a marriage that had felt finished long before it officially ended. When Braden appeared, quietly, without spectacle, she treated him the way one treats something beautiful but impractical. Carefully, with humor, at arm's length at first. Their first conversation unsettled her more than she admitted. It wasn't flirtation, not really. It was something worse, something gentler. He spoke in images, in pauses. He asked questions that didn't feel like questions so much as invitations. When he talked about the wind, something in her chest shifted, like a door she'd forgotten about being nudged open. She remembered sitting on the edge of her bed that night, laptop warm against her thighs, Anthony asleep down the hall. She told herself she'd log off after 5 minutes. She logged off 3 hours later, heart humming. "Be careful," she warned herself. This is how stories start, but life had taught her that the most dangerous things never announce themselves loudly. They arrive politely. They wait for their turn. Braden didn't push. That, more than anything, disarmed her. Men in her life had always wanted clarity, definition, assurance. Braden seemed content to exist in the space between sentences. He listened in a way that made her feel less like she was being evaluated and more like she was being witnessed. When he called her Peb, she laughed out loud, alone in her kitchen. "Pebbles," she typed back. "Really?" But later, washing dishes, she turned the word over in her mouth. Pebbles were small, unassuming, but they changed landscapes slowly, persistently, by simply staying. She didn't tell him this, but the name mattered. She read his messages carefully, sometimes twice. She noticed how he never rushed to fix things. How he didn't offer solutions when she vented about the city, about her job, about the low-grade exhaustion that came from rebuilding a life while pretending you weren't grieving the old one. He didn't treat her separation like a scandal or a weakness. He treated it like context. That alone felt radical. When he asked if she remembered the first night they spoke, her fingers hovered over the keys. She felt the weight of the truth pressing against her ribs. "Yes," she wanted to say. "I remember because something in me recognized something in you." Instead, she answered carefully but honestly. When he told her she mattered, she closed her eyes. She didn't say this aloud, but he had become the quiet part of her day she looked forward to. The moment when she wasn't just a mother, or an employee, or a woman who had made hard choices too young and was now paying interest on them. With him, she was simply herself, sometimes late at night. After Anthony was asleep and the city had softened its noise, she wondered what Braddon looked like when he wasn't thinking, when he laughed without restraint, when he reached for someone without hesitation. She wondered what his silence held. When he spoke about pain, physical or otherwise, she recognized the restraint of someone who had learned early not to ask for comfort because comfort wasn't guaranteed. That understanding sat between them, unspoken but present. The gifts unsettled her. Not because of their cost, but because of the intention behind them. The way he remembered Anthony. The way he planned without making it feel transactional. She told herself not to read into it. She failed. When he joked about being a couch potato, she smiled at her screen like a teenager and hated herself just a little for it. When he spoke philosophically, she rolled her eyes affectionately, even as she saved his words in places she pretended didn't exist. She did not allow herself to imagine the future. That way lies disappointment. But sometimes, quietly, she imagined a different present, a version of herself not bracing for impact, a version that inhaled fully. When Christmas approached, she felt the tension sharpen. Joy braided tightly with fear. She had lived long enough to know that hope was expensive. Still, when he asked nothing extravagant of her, just cologne, just something simple, she felt an unexpected ache. Because what she wanted to give him wasn't something she could wrap. She wanted to give him ease. She wanted to give him a place where affection wasn't rationed or postponed or explained. She wanted to give him a voice that didn't have to be earned. She didn't say any of this. Instead, she typed back with humor, with restraint, with the care of someone standing at the edge of a lake in winter, testing the ice with the tip of her boot. She knew better than to rush. But she also knew this. Some connections didn't ask permission. They waited patiently. And then they changed you. Quietly. Permanently. This voice, newly awakened, answers back, and Braddon, for the first time in a very long while, lets himself breathe it in. Christmas held a promise of miracles, but they both hesitated to hope. Perhaps fate had collided their worlds for a reason, something grand or something fleeting. Only time would tell. For now, they could only hold onto the mystery that had brought them together and keep hopping, even if just quietly, for a little magic.